Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Matsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site. We also have an app. Search for KVRF over on the iTunes or the Apple Store or Google Play. You can also find all of our episodes over on DogWorksRadio.com. Calling in from Southern California is Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert, although I have to confess that just before we came on the air, I broke one of my toes.
Oh, no.
But, you know, it's just a toe, so we soldier on.
Well, you know, I have a broken foot, so I think we're in the same boat. Is it the left or the right?
It's the left, and it's the big toe, so it's not. I think you are in much worse shape because you can pretty much just tape a toe to the next toe and you're okay. But if it's the foot, that's a much more serious thing.
Oh, very good. So today, Alex, we have a very interesting show. It's been an interesting week for the sport of mushing. Very polarizing stories have developed since we were on the air last Wednesday. We typically do a biweekly show together, but I thought it was important that we got on today to talk about some of these issues. We're going to talk about some of the new rules at Iditarod that were talked about and put in place this past Friday, and then the big story of the day is a documentary that just came out or is going to be coming out at a film festival in Canada, and it's caused quite a bit of stir in the mushing community, and I want to make sure that we get a chance to talk about that. So, but first, Alex, let's talk about they aren't necessarily new rules, but they are rules that are now set in place. Is that right?
Right, and the Iditarod Trail Committee had announced that for the first time this year they would allow cell phones and satellite phones, which would provide the possibility of two-way communications. But in the original rule, the Iditarod Trail Committee said that if you used the cell phone or a satellite phone to get outside help or coaching, that was a cause for immediate disqualification. And several mushers, including very, very high-profile mushers like Dallas Seavey, came out very publicly against this and asked the ITC to reconsider because, among other things, they said that there was no real way to enforce the no-coaching part of this rule, and that if someone had a cell phone, they would, whether or not they were getting what we would categorize as out-and-out coaching, they would be able to get information on the trail that would give them an edge.
So, you know, this was talked a lot about right after last year's Iditarod, and I think it was very quickly announced because of what happened to Allie and Jeff with the snow machiner out there on the trail, and, you know, that whole mess that was happening. And then this rule was put into place, and there's been a little bit of talk about it over the last 6 months or so, but it really started heating up just in this past week. And even back then, Alex, a lot of these guys were saying, you know, we need to keep the purity of the race. You know, we want to keep it historical and, you know, low tech, et cetera, et cetera. But if you recall, one or two mushers back then said, we're going to use it to our full advantage. We're going to use it to gain an upper hand, so to speak. What is your take on both sides of that spectrum? The folks that will use it in some capacity, or the ones that want to be purists?
You know, it's a difficult thing, and as you said, the reason this rule came into effect was out of concern for musher safety and wanting to avoid situations like what happened with Allie and Jeff last year. And so I understand that point of view about it. You know, many people have pointed out that the race hasn't been the pure example of the Iditarod for a long time since they started, you know, heavily grooming the trail and having snow machiners go out and break trail, and there's not as much camping and having to just have the competitors break the trail as they go along. That's resulted in it going from, you know, a 3-week race to a 8 or 9 day race, and it's made it much faster and more exciting. So on the one hand, I still love the ideals I have of what the purity of the race is, even though I realize that what I think of as being pure Iditarod is actually a watered down version of what some of the people who are around in the 70s would consider pure Iditarod. So I understand people wanting to keep it, you know, man and dog against nature, and so I understand that point of view. On the other hand, if I were a competitor and I had the opportunity to take a satellite phone or a cell phone with me, I think I probably would want to do that. I'm not sure I would, but I would definitely want to do that, if only so that I could, not even necessarily getting a step up in terms of the race, but in, you know, being able to more easily talk to friends or loved ones when you're in the middle of nowhere and maybe you're feeling down and you need to be picked up.
So that, in a sense, is one of the big issues, is being able to talk to people on the trail. You know, Iditarod for years has been very careful to not allow any outside communication whatsoever, in particular folks that are not involved with the race. And as you mentioned, your friends and family. You know, there's been a lot of talk about how they can enforce this rule. Will folks just be, you know, cruising down the trail, chatting away on their sat phones, or what are they going to be doing? And if there isn't a easy way to enforce it, what, you know, are they going to, you know, have some type of penalty for it? Is it an automatic disqualification if it's used to talk to your friends and family versus, you know, the Iditarod committee itself? I know that there is right now a disqualification rule if the button is pushed, so to speak, on the spot trackers, so on and so forth. But, you know, there's also been a lot of talk, Alex, about how to use this as a safety measure. And there's been folks that have talked about putting it in a sealed bag so that you can't access it. And if you break that seal, you know, obviously you've used your phone. I know a couple of years ago they did that on the Junior Iditarod when my daughter Nicole ran. They said that they're able to take their cell phones, but it was in, you know, in a sealed bag. Think of like a tamper-proof container like you would seal evidence in or something like that with a police department. If that seal's broke, then of course you've broken the rule. So, you know, it's a very interesting take on it, but I think one of the biggest issues that I have is the mushers have spoken and they weren't necessarily listened to, and I think that's opening up a whole nother can of worms on this. Of course, mushers don't have a union like the NFL does, where, you know, they pretty much work out everything before the big event. What do you think about that, about their voices not being heard and sort of the Iditarod making their own rules?
Well, you know, it's a tricky thing, too, because the past couple of years we've also had the so-called gag rule, where mushers are not allowed to speak up basically against the Iditarod Trail Committee. So they are – a lot of mushers are feeling like they aren't quite sure what's allowed and what's not allowed. There are issues with whether they can speak out against some of the sponsors of the race if they have disagreements with the sponsors. But I would have to think that this is a very tricky thing, because without the top mushers, there would not be nearly as much interest in the Iditarod. And it seems like a bunch of the very top mushers in the sport right now came out against this new rule. And to be fair, the Iditarod did listen to them, and they held an open hearing last Friday. But then they seemed to, and from what I've heard of the open hearing, every musher who was there was against this rule. And rather than really reconsider the rule, what they seem to have done is to have adopted a compromise that I don't think anybody would be happy with, which is basically say you can use the cell phones or the satellite phones, but then they took out the line about it being an automatic disqualification if you used it to get outside assistance. And the Iditarod is saying, well, there still is a rule against outside assistance, but now it's not an automatic disqualification. So I think this is making the issue of whether you can use the phones to get help muddier rather than clearer.
It's muddy all around. And as I mentioned, sort of how other sports work out their differences, whether it be a union or, you know, sort of a band of brothers, so to speak. But I guess my final point on this, or final question to you, Alex, before we move on, is how much do you think the Brent Sass disqualification a couple of years ago for having an iPod Touch or whatever it was that was able to connect to the Internet, how much do you think this came into play in regards to this rule?
I think that was an incident that nobody was happy about, because Brent admitted that he had this device and realized that it was against the rules, even though he was not using it for two-way communication. And I think that part of what the Iditarod is trying to do is to prevent those kind of incidents again, but in doing so, they've literally opened up, you know, a whole new area of potential conflicts and potential problems. One of the things that I keep thinking is, since there is a telecommunication company that's a major Iditarod sponsor, I'm wondering if it might not be a good thing to have them or some other sponsor basically give each team a phone to take with them, a satellite phone that is only to be used in emergencies, because then that would cover the safety angle, but it would lessen the possibility that it would be used for outside help, especially since if you had people getting their phone essentially from the Iditarod or from one of the sponsors, then it would be much easier to track when and how that was used, as opposed to the rule now, which basically is saying you can bring your phone, use it wherever you have a signal, or you can bring your own satellite phone and use it anywhere.
Right, and that's another cat in the bag, I guess, so to speak, thinking about that sponsor providing those phones. For folks that are not familiar, that particular communications company's phones are pretty much the only phones that work in a lot of the villages. They've set up that network through Alaska so that company's phones do work there, where the big boys that most people have, especially in the lower 48, they don't have a signal at all. So I think that's a very interesting part of it as well. Alex, very quickly, I want to mention about another rule that was talked about and something that has become very commonplace in the last few years, and that is the long trailers or cabooses that have been used on Iditarod. And often in the last couple of years, some of the mushers have been using them to transport dogs, and in particular to rest dogs on the trail. And I remember speaking on this show and saying that if we could figure out a way to rest all 16 dogs, you know, in alternate, realistically, you would never have to stop on Iditarod with the exception of your mandatory 24s and your mandatory 8s and things. So very quickly, what is your take on that rule, Alex?
This came pretty much as a big surprise to me, and I think to most people. I was not aware of an outcry or people complaining about the cabooses or the trailers, but in this meeting that the ITC had last week, they came out with a rule that said, and this is my understanding of it, that the trailers would still be allowed, but you couldn't transport dogs in them. And since that's one of the primary reason why people have them, it seems like that's a strange development. And I'm wondering if maybe that's an effort to get back to more of a purist view of the Iditarod where your dogs are running, or maybe you have one or possibly two that you can put in the sled bag, but other than that, your dogs are running or you drop them.
Right. I'm sure over the next few shows, you and I will delve into this a little bit deeper. I guess one way to look at it is 2016, and there are many, many more technology advances that are out there than there were in the 70s, 80s, 90s, or even 2000. So it's interesting to see how the Iditarod's becoming a 21st, or I guess mid-21st, early decades race, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that develops. Aren't you, Alex?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I believe it was Jeff King who was one of the first people to use these trailers and be able to give his dogs additional rest. And since then, it's been adopted by the CVs and used very, very successfully, especially by Dallas.
Right. And Jeff King is the master at innovation. He was he's been on the cusp of many of these new technology developments, in particular with the hardware that we use in mushing, whether it be sleds or the harnesses and the snow hooks and the hookups and all that sort of stuff. So, Alex, the next part of it is causing quite a stir, and in particular the last day or two. And I wanted to really talk to you about this because, first and foremost, you are a filmmaker. And I know you and I talked a little bit about this on Facebook this morning, on Facebook Messenger. And it's a very interesting development in terms of, you know, the two sides of the coin, the pro mushing community and then, of course, the anti-mushing community. We've dealt with this in the mushing community for years. There's always been a tremendous amount of backlash in our community about what people often do not know but they want to have an opinion on. Very similar to how people talk about horse racing and greyhound racing and all sorts of other sports and events out there that often come from people that are not very educated. So I don't know exactly the best way to start this, but I'm going to let you go ahead and then we'll kind of go from there. We have about 12 minutes. I'm sure we could fill up a whole hour on this.
Yeah. So basically, for those who aren't entirely up to speed, there is a new documentary that is called Sled Dogs that is going to be playing at the Whistler Film Festival in Canada and I assume a bunch of other film festivals. It was it came out of the Canadian Broadcasting System, or Canadian Broadcasting Company, and I believe will be eventually shown on the CBC. And this is, I have not seen the movie, but I've seen the trailer, and I've been reading a lot of things that people are posting about it. And the trailer seems to be a condemnation of people who use sled dogs for touring, so for tourist companies where you can go and take sled dog rides. And it seems to particularly be focusing on an operation out of Snowmass, Colorado. But then, at least according to the trailer, they sort of conflate this to cover all mushers and Iditarod mushers and really condemning dog care and the sport in general. In particular, there is a Iditarod rookie who was a rookie named Patrick Beal, who was working with the Seavies, who was interviewed extensively by the filmmakers while he was training at the start of the race, at several points during the race, and then when he arrived in Nome. And according to what he said on Facebook, he was under the impression that the movie was going to be a celebration of how a rookie was able to compete in and complete Iditarod, and that he was very proud of the work that he did and the work that his dogs did, and then was very shocked and disappointed when he found out that the focus and the slant of this film is really condemning any use of dogs in pulling sleds.
So, from my understanding, it was made under false pretenses. These folks arrived at a lot of these kennels and put up a kind of a guise of saying, we want to interview you and hear your story, and then they sort of formed their own version of the story in terms of how they told their story in the film. So I guess I have a couple of questions for you in regards to filmmaking. First, my question is, what role should the film festival be involved with this? Should they automatically say, we don't want to play it because one side of the community says that we shouldn't? Or should they have some leeway in being allowed to play whatever they have accepted to be shown at their festival? That's my first question. And my second question is, should or should not filmmakers be able to have the ability to make their own story? Whether it's good, bad, or indifferent to one side of the community, there's always going to be two sides. What do you think that comes into play in terms of this? Now, I'm not, of course, not condoning the movie whatsoever, but I'm interested to hear the filmmaker side of you in the storytelling, as well as getting that movie shown in festivals and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, those are both great and very difficult questions. I am first and foremost very much in favor of freedom of speech, and I don't believe, except under very, very rare circumstances, that people should be censored. Having said that, I do think that the film festivals have an obligation, especially when they're presenting something that is a documentary and something that is you know, coming across as being objective fact, that they have an obligation to be fair. And that's not to say that this movie shouldn't be shown, but that this movie shouldn't be shown and then have no opportunity to answer this, and have no one be given the opportunity to rebut some of the points in this movie. In the trailer, the filmmaker says several times that people who run the Iditarod are just interested in fame and fortune. And we've talked about this a lot, and fans of the show know this. There's not a lot of fame and fortune going on in the dog mushing world. It is mostly, even for the teams that are very successful and consistently do very well in races, it is something that is very, very difficult to make money at. You would probably be better off if you had a full-time job working, you know, in a retail store. So this is something that, you know, to say that the Mitch Seavies and the Dallas Seavies of the world, or the Jeff Kings or Lance Mackeys or, you know, whatever name you want to plug in, don't care about dogs but are only in this for the money, is completely ridiculous. The other part of this, and getting to your second question, the part that really bothers and annoys me is that I feel very strongly that filmmakers and people who are coming in and trying to tell someone's story have an obligation to the truth, and they have an obligation to people who trust them. And it's when I was making my movie, I ran into a couple of people who were very wary of me because I'm not from Alaska, and they were uncertain of what my motives were, and you know, because a lot of people outside of Alaska have sort of warped views of what sled dog racing is and what proper dog care is, and so I think that there was I was very lucky to have people who trusted me with their stories, and it was something that I took very seriously. And I think we've talked in the past that one of the things that I love about people who race dogs is that they are generally a little bit eccentric and maybe sometimes a little bit crazy, but in a good way. And you can come in and you can just take stuff that anyone says and use it out of context and make it create, you know, what seems to be a totally different reality. And I was very conscious of that and very conscious of living up to the trust that had been placed in me. And it sounds to me, from what I read on Patrick's page and from what other people have said about how the filmmaker interacted with other mushers and with the Iditarod Trail Committee, they really did not enter into a lot of this in good faith, and that, or so it seems, and that is very, very bothersome. I mean, that's very disturbing to me.
You know, I totally agree, and of course, you and I both have not seen the film, and it would be very interesting to see what exactly they do produce when it does come out. So very quickly, Alex, we have just a couple of minutes. What do you think is going to happen because of this in terms of mushing in general? The Iditarod, it's my understanding, you had mentioned to me this morning that the Iditarod sort of gave them a ticket to follow along with Patrick in particular. What do you think the fallout of this is going to be in terms of for fans in particular, not necessarily, you know, the sport? I think the sport's going to live on. We have dealt with this negative publicity for a long time, and of course there's always bad apples in the bunch, but by and large, by many, many more percentages than not, most of us, you know, take great care in how we deal with our dogs.
I think there's a number of things. The unfortunately, if this does get wide play, then what people will think of when they think of Iditarod will be dogs being mistreated, as opposed to, you know, any of the heroic stories or thinking about great champions like the Seavies or Jeff King or Lance Mackey. So I'm afraid that will happen. Also, the Iditarod Trail Committee has been trying to get more control, I think it's fair to say, over the media that covers it, and I think that this is going to result in them really becoming much more restrictive than they have been in the past. I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. It always amazed and thrilled me that the Iditarod was an event where you could basically have access to almost anybody if you just, you know, had a little bit of perseverance and hung around. So I think that might tighten up a little bit. Having said that, it's still a 1,000-mile race, and you can't police and patrol every mile of the Iditarod Trail. So I also selfishly, as someone who has more things, more stories, and more films that I want to do that have to do with the Iditarod, I'm worried that this is going to make it more difficult for me and for other people who really are wanting to tell the kind of stories that that are more truthful and hopefully more heroic.
Well, as I said, this is something that really has just developed over the last day or so, so it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm sure everybody is very well aware of what the mushers have said, in particular on social media. I think all of us sort of have said the same thing. So I know what side of the fence, of course, they're on. It's just going to be very interesting to see what develops from this. And, of course, it may kind of just fizzle out. It may just be aired at the film festival, and that's it, and it sort of just kind of wash itself away. But I don't know. This is one that's very perplexing to me, and something that that I haven't quite put a finger on. First off, the why that they would do this, and the manner that they did it, and of course what their intentions are in the future. So we'll keep touch on this, Alex, and keep on reporting on it as best as we can. At least from a musher's point of view and a filmmaker's point of view, I think that's a pretty interesting perspective that we can bring to this.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it probably goes without saying, but let me just jump in and say it anyway. I know that both you and I are always concerned with the dogs and the dogs being well taken care of, and I would say, you know, without exception, every musher that I've ever met has had that same focus.
Right.
And if there are people who are doing things to dogs or mistreating dogs, I think we certainly want to shine a light on that and correct that, or make sure that those people aren't in a position where they're able to deal with dogs in the future.
Very good.
But, you know, there's certain things that if you present them out of context, like having a dog yard where dogs are on chains, that if you just have a shot of a dog on a chain, that might seem cruel, but knowing that the dog is not on a chain for his entire life, and that there's a lot more that goes on with it, you know, you realize that that is not just having a dog on a chain does not mean the dog is being mistreated.
Right. So, Alex, we are out of time. Very quickly, we did place Patrick Beal's rebuttal to the film over on our Facebook page on Dog Works Radio. You can check that out. I shared it from, I believe it's called the Alaska Mushing News. It is a site that Helen Hegener is the editor or an admin of. So I would encourage all of our listeners to go over and read that. And, of course, make your opinions heard on this. You know, I'm sure that everybody is listening to this show is definitely a mushing fan. So I'm interested in your comments and your concerns on this, and we'll do our best to shed our opinions on the story as it develops, even though we are a weekly show. So, Alex, we are out of time. We'll talk next week, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. On behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, we'll see you guys next time.